Hey everyone, I'm Coach Al Lyman.
And I'm Dr. Kurt Strecker, and we are the experts behind Pursuit Athletic Performance, one of the nation's cutting-edge sports training companies with an outstanding reputation for getting athletes just like you stronger, more powerful, and faster, all while keeping you uninjured and in the game year after year.
Our weekly podcast will share honest, effective training tips and information, from the nuances of triathlon to the rigors of ultra running, as well as the latest in sports medicine and nutrition. Our goal is to explode the training myths and untruths marketed to athletes and to teach you how to truly unleash your ultimate potential. Be sure to subscribe for free updates of our proven strategies at pursuitathleticperformance.com. Hi, everyone. Welcome to this new edition of the Pursuit Athletic Performance Podcast. I am your co-host, Coach Al Lyman, joined again by my partner, Dr. Kurt Strecker. Welcome and thanks for joining us. Doc, it's a rainy day in Old Saybrook, or about to be, but nevertheless, sunny inside our lab.
It's sunny in here, man. It's always sunny
brother,
in here.
Oh, brother, it's sunny in here.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Excellent. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Awesome.
Doing great. Looking forward to giving a little thanks here coming up on Thursday.
That's right. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. It is truly a day for giving thanks, and we all have so much to be grateful for. And Doc, I am grateful to have you as a partner. We have done some amazing work here in our lab, you know, and every once in a while we lose sight of how many people we've helped and what an impact we've had on the world around us, at least as it relates to people that want to be healthier and move better and go faster and go longer faster, or faster longer, right?
Yeah, right back at you, Coach. We've had a great opportunity, and who'd have thought the business would grow as it has, and we've been able to reach a lot of people and put smiles on some faces out there, which is pretty great.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, very positive.
Our topic today is the one secret that everybody wants to know or should know about improving their running form and technique.
That's it. This is the one nobody's telling you.
The one nobody's telling you. Yeah. You know, I think I can think back on so many years. I probably, you know, for the better part of 30 years have thought about running form and technique. I've given many technique clinics over the years. But my thinking and how we approach running form technique has certainly evolved over time. And it's evolved for many, many reasons, but mostly because we've got a much greater understanding of what actually creates our technique and our form.
Absolutely.
I think why people run the way they do.
Absolutely. I think the ability to watch as many runners as we have on video and also be there not just for that moment in time when they're running on the treadmill for the first time and we're collecting data, but to watch their transformation. You know, we have so many runners come through here, and triathletes, of course, and we get these people at the very beginning of their journey, and then we get them periodically as they progress through their journey. And you know, without having introduced any running form classes, we don't have running form classes, do we?
We do not.
I haven't met any.
We right? do not.
And to see the transformation that occurs from the inside out as a byproduct of appropriate mobility and appropriate stability. And the work that we do here is nothing short of amazing, quite honestly.
Yeah, it really is. So as we talk about this topic and give our listeners something to really chew on and think about, let's start at the beginning and put something out there. And I'm going to be really honest, Doc. You know, I think we all need to accept and understand the fact that how we run is a function of what's happening on the inside. The running gait cycle, in fact, movement, human movement, is so incredibly complex. There's literally thousands of things occurring at any one moment in time. Runners, especially really smart runners, believe that they can consciously control the most critical elements of the run gait cycle by changing how they think. And bright people believe they have that power, but the truth is that the things that impact how our feet hit the ground, the position of our pelvic girdle, what happens at our hip joint during that mid-stance phase of the stride, all of those aspects are things which are extremely complex, and how they happen, what determines what happens as they occur during the gait cycle, is a function of something happening on the inside of our body, not on the outside. It cannot be controlled consciously. Are there elements, and we'll talk about them as we go, that we can control consciously? And they're very global, holistic aspects. But we know, in terms of the way the human mind works, that we can't focus on more than one thing at a time. And when there are so many complex things going on, there's no way we can control those truly individual and inside aspects, such as stability and et cetera, and all those other things that I alluded to. You can't control it consciously. It's a byproduct of how we're moving, our mobility, our core stability or lack thereof, our core strength, the way our body is integrated and how it functions, the top half and the bottom half, something we talk about every day here with folks in our lab. It isn't about a single exercise or a single part of our body. It's how everything is working and moving together. And it's a reflection of our lifestyle. It's a reflection of how we've developed as a human being. Of course, it's a function of some of our innate abilities, our genetic gifts, if you will, the shape of our bones, how we're constructed. But it's also a byproduct of those other aspects, as I mentioned. So many folks come to us and they believe that there's the one thing we can teach them or show them that they may have read in an article that some coach wrote or some other quote-unquote expert wrote about how they can change their technique. And of course, you and I know that perhaps the most pervasive myth out there that a lot of runners believe is you can buy a pair of shoes that will have a profound impact on your technique in a positive way. Sometimes a shoe will have a profound impact in a negative way. But you cannot change to a minimalist shoe, as an example, and turn yourself into a 4-foot or midfoot runner. It isn't that simple, and that path will always lead ultimately to some kind of a negative result if we look at that progression long term. So the first thing, again, this is a long-winded way of saying you've got to look at movement as the first path toward really changing technique or form if you want to look at it in that respect. And you cannot change how you're running in a very profound way from simply thinking about things in a different way or applying conscious thought to that process.
That's right on the money. I'm always reminded of the picture that we share with people that you have of Usain Bolt. And, you know, we can point to that picture and say, run like that. But folks can't do it. Why? Well, they're not anywhere near as strong as he is. Or maybe they're not as flexible as he is. You know, if you sit in a chair all day and your hip flexors are, you know, wound tighter than a drum, you can't create the same hip extension that he has. You physically can't get into that position. So to, you know, take measurements of hip angle and knee angle and, you know, all of these things from the side, there's very little meaning in those, because you can't, as you just described, say to a person, hey, you know, when you go through this next, you know, 200 meters at, you know, as fast as you can go, I'd like 137 degrees of the hip, please. Right. Ain't happening.
Well, I mean, certainly, you know, and there are so many examples. You use Usain Bolt or any other elite runner. In the triathlon world, we're looking now, the focus is on Marinda because of her incredible run
Remarkable.
Off the bike in Kona.
Remarkable.
And by the way, we love to do this in this sport. We love to put any individual runner at any moment in time. Of course, when I came into the sport, it was Mark Allen, because he was a guy that ran 240 off the bike in Kona. And so we wanted to look at what Mark Allen was doing. Whatever he was drinking, whatever he was eating, whatever he was smoking at the time, that's what we got to do so we can run like Mark, right? But in this day and age, it's Marinda. And of course, she's a remarkable runner. But the thing to really focus on is, as you said, it isn't about trying to mimic what she does from a running perspective. Marinda runs the way she does because of how she's built, how she's moving, her mobility, flexibility, stability, and strength, And of course, everything else about her background and her training all come together that produce a result, which is that 250 run off the bike. It isn't any one of those individual aspects. But certainly, as an example, and let's just throw something really basic out. We look at how stable Mirinda is during the run gait cycle on a single leg. We stop that video and we pause right there. And we notice that her pelvic girdle is very stable and the core is functioning very, very well from the standpoint of, you know, right from her head right through to her feet touching the ground. Everything is in appropriate alignment. We can't take an athlete who can't do a single one-leg squat without maintaining that same muscular skeletal stacking in alignment and then say, oh, go run like Mirinda. You know, it's just not going to happen. There's a huge gap there, and that gap there is all of the things that we've alluded to this point in time. So it isn't about trying to mimic how someone runs. And I got to tell you, you know, one of the things that really ticks me off as a coach is when I hear another coach allude to some of these aspects in a cursory way and say, go do this or go do that. You know, as though your arm position is going to impact how long your hip flexors are, or whether or not your butt is working, or whether or not you have appropriate hip stability to support your body on a single leg, you know, 30,000 times, you know, in a marathon, or however many times there are there. When coaches say those things, what they're really saying to me is they don't know what they're talking about, because it isn't about those peripheral aspects, it's something much deeper and more profound. As we like to say, the technique and form things that folks like to talk about are really frosting on the cake. They're not the cake itself. Can we make some subtle changes, either with our posture, thinking about a taller, higher chest, dropping our shoulders away from our ears? Those are subtle things that we can talk about. Certainly we can, and we should get into overstriding just for a little bit, because that's probably the most commonly referred to form or technique aspect that a lot of coaches will talk about. But can we talk about some of those subtle aspects of technique and form after the foundation is established and movement is addressed? Yes, we can. That's frosting on the cake. Those are subtle little things that we can do to refine somebody's technique. And certainly in the sprinting world, there's a lot to talk about there with respect to technique. But whenever a coach talks about those aspects without first looking at movement and making sure the foundation is there and addressing mobility and flexibility and stability in a real and true and profound way, then the frosting doesn't stick. It just falls off the cake and nothing really lasts.
It's no different than the approach that we seem to have as a whole population with everything. You know, we jump to the hardest level, right?
Right.
We want to skip all the basics and, you know, start trying.
That's really profound, by the way. That's really what it's about. You know,
it's starting at the beginning. It really is starting at the beginning. You know, and you know, you talk about arm carriage. Sure, I mean, we can make small changes and suggestions in terms of arm carriage, but if an athlete is running and they're carrying an arm, you know, 2 feet away from the side, the elbow is flailing away, that's not, you know, a choice. That is a byproduct of instability someplace else. You know, if the left hip is dropping when they're standing on the right foot, that right elbow is way out trying to counterbalance that. So you can't make that change arbitrarily. It is a byproduct of what's happening to the body as a whole. And we tend to reduce, much like, you know, sometimes in medicine, we reduce everything to a tiny little square. We're looking at the patella tendon, right? Or we're looking at, you know, and in the absence of, you know, a fractured bone or something like that, you know, or a torn piece of tissue, you know, you've got to look at the entire person in terms of how they're moving, how they're carrying themselves, what they do all day long. And we say it all the time. It's a bit redundant maybe for folks who've listened to us, but, you know, we are not a knee or a hip or an ankle. We're a whole person. And that is never truer than when you look at someone in slow motion running at 5K pace on a treadmill. Because that, you know, 10% of what we're looking at is their technique, their form. But the rest of it is really, where are the weaknesses? Where are the imbalances? Where are the flaws? And so, and I think that one of the most powerful testaments to that is perhaps, you know, one of the athletes we had in a couple of years ago, right? Linda, right? And Linda spent several months, 5 or 6 months, you know, working hard. She was in a bad way, and she spent about 5 or 6 months not running and working only on, you know, developing her frame and correcting her movement and really developing good movement patterns and appropriate flexibility and mobility. And when we brought her back in, you know, and 6 months and said, run, you know, there, you didn't say, look, I want you to do this with your knee, right? No. You just said, run.
Just run.
And the before and after video is fairly remarkable in that you can see the expression of the new movement in the running. And that's the key. Otherwise, you're going backwards. You're putting the cart before the horse, right?
Yeah.
It's inside out, not outside in. Don't change the shoe. The shoe doesn't make you overstride. The shoe and that's a common misconception. You know, you read the, you know, the minimalist shoe companies talking about, well, this shoe keeps you from overstriding. No, that's crap. I mean, it's completely ridiculous. It you know, you may feel more in a minimalist shoe, so when you land on the heel, it hurts, and that might shorten your stride up, and you could argue that there's a beneficial effect there. But it has no effect on what happens at the hip or the knee, right?
Yeah.
Or the mobility in the thoracic spine. So, you know, all of these things come from the center and work their way out. And, you know, that's might be one of the most important things that I think we maybe have learned in the past few years by examining all of the video that we've had the opportunity to do.
Yeah. You know, there's one other thing that always resonates with me, and that is, because we live in an information age, Doc, I mean, there's so much information out there and so many people writing about things like technique and YouTube, of course, so many videos of runners. One of the mistakes that I think a lot of developing runners or novices that want to learn more make is this idea that there is one perfect technique.
Correct.
You know, we all try to mimic what Mirinda Carfrey looks like. Well, we're not Mirinda. You know, there is a correct and appropriate form for every individual runner, depending on how they're constructed, how
they're
made.
That's a great point.
You know?
That's a great point.
And we've all seen it. We've seen runners go really, really fast, and we look at them, and well, they don't look like Susie Favor Hamilton. She's one runner in particular that I always think about, who's a past Olympian, an American Olympian, who had the most incredibly graceful, gazelle-like running, and we all want to look like Susie, you know, but it's a little bit like the magazine articles that put someone who's been, you know, shall we say, improved technologically on the cover. It's not about looking like someone else. It's about taking what you have, how you're constructed, what your body is.
Making the most of it.
And making the most of it. And that starts, as you mentioned, on the inside, you know? And I mentioned earlier we would talk for a moment about overstriding, and we should probably transition right into that. And just cover that briefly, because I think it is one of those elements that is so often discussed, not only from the folks that are trying to sell you a minimalist shoe to stop you from overstriding, but also the other folks that want to sell you on a running technique clinic or class, where they'll tell you they'll stop you from overstriding by learning some aspect of technique. And I think on that topic, one of the first things I want to throw out, and then I'll let you jump in, is, again, not to be redundant, but very often what we see here in the lab is that when we identify that someone is overstriding, we usually will find that there's an imbalance around the hips and pelvis that puts that athlete in a position where they're trying to grab more ground. When I say they, I don't mean consciously. I mean that their body, in an adaptive sense or in a compensated sense, is trying to grab a little bit more ground and ends up landing in front of them, their center of mass, if you will, and producing what appears to be overstriding. When we help that athlete or individual to restore some balance in the center of their body and achieve either a little bit more mobility or a little bit more flexibility around the hips, perhaps on the front of the hips, get the butt working a little bit better and restore some posture. Again, balance, right? Strength and length, the front or the back of the body, when those postural changes occur, the overstriding very often disappears. Sometimes we make some recommendations about stride rate, and that can help, because that's the other aspect of overstriding that we'll often see, is that an athlete's just striding very, very slowly. And so sometimes there are alterations in stride rate, but the bottom line is there's no magic stride rate. There's no specific stride rate that everybody needs to be at. Some people's legs are long, some are short. That's gonna impact stride rate. I remember and he may be listening to this podcast, Rich Markowitz. You remember the before and after video with him? That's up on our blog. Folks need to go check that out. That was nothing more than postural changes and a restoration of balance that completely changed Rich from a runner that appeared to be overstriding to one who was landing much more in a balanced way that allowed him to put force into the ground much more effectively. So my point is here, and then again, I'll let you jump in, it's more about the balance and the posture and how the body is moving that has the greatest impact on overstriding or not.
I couldn't have said it better. I have nothing to add to that.
All right. Come on, Doc. You got something to add to that. I mean, really, at the end of the day, that's what it's about. And I think, you know, as we've alluded to many times before, and we're going to keep saying it over and over and over again, if you believe that changing, you know, from one shoe to another, changing from a shoe that's more of a traditional running shoe with a little bit of an elevated heel to a shoe that has less of a heel, if you believe that that change alone is going to allow you to run better and or remove the overstriding in your stride, then you're very likely going to be disappointed over the long term that that isn't necessarily what's going to happen. And in some cases, changing to that shoe may lead you to a point where you're at a higher risk of injury.
Yeah,
depending on who you are. Again, you know, calf length, stability, mobility, all of the other aspects that we've talked about many times before.
Just as you described, there's an appropriate stride for everybody, there's an appropriate technique for everybody, there's also an appropriate shoe for everybody, you know, and we're all our own little experiment, right? We're all our N of one. So, you know, figuring that out is the recipe, right? What shoe do I need? What do I need to do to improve my balance and flexibility and mobility? What do I need to do to correct my core stability? How can I then make improvements to myself? That's really what it is.
Right, absolutely. What are the mechanics of my foot?
Right.
And how does that impact the shoe I should wear? So forth and so on. And what is my running history? You know, what's the shape of my body? So, all right, good stuff. I mean, I think that's really important information. And I'll tell you, that's what I've learned in doing this for nearly 30 years. So I'll tell our listeners, if you're out there thinking that a running technique class like a Qi class or a pose class is going to change your risk of injury or get you out of a pattern of injury, it ain't going to happen. That's not going to work for you. I applaud some of those guys. I mean, I heard Nicholas Romanoff speak at a coaching clinic back in 1998. He's the creator of the pose method. There's a lot of value to some of the elements he conveys, but that technique program is not going to change ultimately how fast you run or how resilient your body is or how resistant to injury you are. It just isn't going to happen. And certainly with all of the other quote-unquote schools of technique, you're barking up a wrong tree if you think that's going to lead to long-term improvement, long-term sustainability, and faster running. It just isn't going to happen. It's like anything else. At the end of the day, you got to go back and master the basics, find out more about you as an individual athlete, and then try to be better by doing the right work in a smart way over time. No shortcuts, no easy path, but there is a path that will produce tremendous fulfillment and satisfaction if you follow it in a smart way. And with that, Doc, I'm signing off. I got nothing left.
Do the work. Do the work that's appropriate for you. I mean, that's really it. And you have to be able to look in the mirror and critically decide what that is, you know?
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And we're here to help you with that if we can. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. I hope everybody has a safe, happy, healthy, joyous Thanksgiving. And we'll see you next time on the podcast.
Sounds good, Doc. All right, any questions, folks, send them our way, info@pursuitathleticperformance.com. Don't forget to check us out on Facebook, like us there, jump into the convos. And of course, as always, be great, take care of yourself, take care of your body. The future is bright. Happy holidays, everybody. Rock on.
Thank you for tuning in to the Pursuit Athletic Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a 5-star rating and review here on iTunes. Be sure to head over to pursuitathleticperformance.com to subscribe for free tips and strategies to help you get strong, get fast, and unleash the amazing athlete in you.